Podcasts are supported by Cohen Media Group, presenting the film Ash is Purest White. A loving girlfriend defends her gangster boyfriend in an act that sends her to prison. While she's in jail, her boyfriend moves on. Starts today at Limley Monica and ArcLight Hollywood.
You're listening to Film Week on 89.3 KPCC. I'm Larry Mantle. Joined this week by film critics Peter Rayner of the Christian Science Monitor, Christy Lemire of RogerEbert.com and co-host of the Breakfast All Day podcast, and Charles Solomon, critic for Animation Scoop and Animation Magazine. We begin with 5 Feet Apart, which stars young Haley Lou Richardson and Cole Sprouse. It's directed by Justin Baldoni in his feature directorial debut, and it's written by Mickey Daughtry and Tobias Yakonis. Christy, please start us on 5 Feet Apart.
So this is a beautiful dying teens movie. It's its own entire young adult subgenre. There's a million books like this, a million movies like this, where people are beautiful, but they're sick and they can't be together.
But they look great.
They're amazingly gorgeous, given how they're supposed to be on the brink of death. However, and they're attracted to each other. That is the key. So here we have Haley Lou Richardson and Cole Sprouse. They both have cystic fibrosis. They are both in the same hospital at the same time, a few doors away from each other. And as is always the case in any kind of romantic comedy, they hate each other immediately, and they bicker and they squabble, but there's that tension between them. They are both very smart, quick-witted, and they have a decent chemistry with each other, but of course they eventually wear down one another's defenses. But the thing is, they can't touch each other. And actually, the title is 5 Feet Apart. They're supposed to remain 6 feet apart at all times. The threat being that bacteria, their systems are so compromised and their lung capacity is so weakened that bacteria will just flatten them. And whatever medication they've been taking, it won't do any good, whatever. They decide to risk it and be 5 feet apart. So not touching, but closer than they should be. Right. For a long time, no touching. And, they have okay chemistry with each other. Haley Lee Richardson makes wonderful choices ordinarily. She's so great in Columbus, and she's so great in Support the Girls and Edge of 17. She has this lovely, natural, effervescent, accessible quality to her screen presence here. She doesn't get that much to work with besides just sort of being perky and plucky, and Cole Sprouse is kind of a young
Timothy
brooding.
Chalamet, yeah. Lookalike
with incredible hair. I saw the TV ad. I so covet his hair.
yeah. The hair remains in place.
He was a Disney Channel guy. He and his brother, his twin brother, were on The Suite Life with Zach and Cody.
Identical twin.
Yes. There you go.
Peter, what do you think?
Well, this movie is what it is. There's a quote. It's sort of a YA Romeo and Juliet, cystic fibrosis rom-com with dark overtones. Where everything is going. There's also her best friend is gay, who's also a patient there. So there's a lot of things in this movie that are time limited, shall we say, and you know where it's all going. Christy and I had a bet. Going into see which of the two leads would survive or some permutation thereof.
Oh, cynical critics.
I was right, by the way. I'm on record as being correct.
She won. Although technically I think we're tied, but okay. We can't
so
get
Peter,
into that.
So despite your years of experience with these movies, Christy beat you out.
I think it's the years of experience that did me in. For what it is, it's very effective. There's tons of melodramatic stuff that gets piled on in the last half hour, which I can't get into, but it's kind of patently ridiculous. But it all sort of works on some level. And I also think that, Haley Richardson is a very good actress. She does bring out, I think, I thought she brought out more colors than you did. I think she actually doesn't play down to the audience and play for pathos in a way that would have been too easy.
The movie is 5 Feet Apart. It's rated PG-13 in wide release. Wonder Park is an animated adventure comedy with no credited director. Charles, please explain.
Well, it was being directed by Dylan Brown, a Pixar veteran, and then he was fired because of inappropriate behavior. And I believe three people who had worked on the story kind of took it over. But in addition to having no director, it doesn't have an original idea in the entire film. It's cobbled together out of pieces of other things. You can feel earlier drafts of the story taking place. June, whom everyone calls Junebug, yet she doesn't slug them, and her mother have created this fantasy amusement park together, full of crowds. I mean, who creates an amusement park for everybody? I mean, you make one for yourself. And when her mother becomes ill and has to go away, oh, she's worried. Her father starts to send her to math camp. She sneaks away and somehow stumbles into the ruins of this park. And she and the stuffed animals who run it have to find a way to do it. And remember in beach party movies when the story used to bog down, somebody would run in and yell, "Hey, everybody, surf's up!" And you'd have 5 minutes of music and Frankie and
Buster
Annette.
Keaton, yeah, in a cameo.
You know, supposedly surfing, and you'd try and pick it up. In animated films, you have roller coaster rides where the camera follows the characters up and around and over and under. I think this one has six, which tells you you're in trouble. But you sit there and say, oh, the fussy porcupine is Mr. Prickle Pants from Toy Story 4. That character is Rex from Toy Story. That's Bing Bang from Inside Out, which it owes a lot to. It's not very much fun, and Spider-Man comes out on Blu-ray. You'd do much better buying that and watching it again.
Into the Spider-Verse.
Yes.
Wonder Park is the film released theatrically this week. It's in wide release. It's rated PG. The film The Mustang is directed by Laure de Clermont-Tonnerre. It's also co-written by her along with Brock Norman Brock. And Matthias Schoenaerts is the star of the film with Connie Britton and Bruce Dern. Christy, what did you think of The Mustang?
Loved it. This might be the best movie of the week. It is beautiful, and it's got tremendous performances. Matthias Schoenaerts stars as a prisoner in Nevada, and we don't know what he's in prison for immediately, but he's clearly a very tormented and volatile man. He's been in solitary confinement quite a bit, and he gets brought into this program, which is a real program where prisoners work with horses, with wild mustangs who have been gathered because, I guess, you know, they're running wild. There aren't that many of them, and so they gather up these horses and they train them in order to sell them to on auction to law enforcement, for example. So a bunch of prisoners get the opportunity to work with horses, and it's rehabilitative for both parties involved. And maybe it's a little obvious that Matthias Schoenaerts' character gets paired up with this seemingly unbreakable Mustang. You know, the two have a lot in common and clearly need each other. But that connection is so wondrous and so quietly powerful. And the transformation that occurs for both is so gorgeously photographed, and it's intimate, and the moments of change, evolution really ring true, and they're quite stirring. This reminded me a lot of a film that came out last year called The Rider.
Oh, I love The Rider.
Which was gorgeous, right?
Love that film.
This has a lot of the same qualities visually in that it feels like a Western a lot of the time, like the vistas, and it just takes its time to paint a portrait of this part of the country, and yet there's a really quiet, powerful intimacy in the time between the characters and the horses. Bruce Dern is really great as the cantankerous trainer
what
of
else?
Everyone. Yeah, it's a good role for him. And then Jason Mitchell is a fellow prisoner who sort of shows
Trick
Matthias
rider.
Schoenaerts the horse, the ropes, rather. This is lovely. And I get to do a Q&A tonight with Matthias Schoenaerts after the 7 o'clock showing at the Landmark. So come see it and come see us talk.
All right. And that is for those, if you're listening on Friday to the program, that's tonight, that Christy's going to be at the Landmark in West L.A. for the 7 o'clock screening with star Matthias Schoenaerts. For those listening Saturday, sorry, it was last night. But
sorry
about that.
It was awesome.
A little time travel never hurt anybody.
Not getting in a time machine.
Yeah, this seems to be sort of a renaissance era for horse-centric movies. You know, there was the Rider in this film and Lean on Pete. You know, I mean, it's I like this film a lot. It is, you know, predictable. You know, as Christy said, so of course Schoenaerts is going to get paired with the wildest Mustang, and of course, you know, they're going to bond. And but the way it's done is very uncondescending and strong. The director is a first-time director, And she really has a good eye, a good sense of placement, a good sense of space. There isn't much to work with visually in this movie. It's set, you know, in the middle of the Nevada desert where the prison is. And the performances from top to bottom are first rate. I thought Bruce Dern in the beginning was a little bit too much like Bruce Dern, but he's wonderful, and I really want to single out especially Jason Mitchell and Gideon Adlon, who plays Schoenaerts' daughter, first rate.
I also think it's worth noting The Mustang, directed by a woman. The Rider was directed by a
yep.
woman. This is what we think of as a traditional kind of Western feeling male genre where yep. women are coming to the fore as outstanding directors. The Mustang, rated R, the Landmark West LA, the ArcLight in Hollywood. You're listening to Film Week.
KPCC podcasts are supported by Cohen Media Group, presenting the new film Ash is Purest White, official selection Cannes Film Festival. A loving girlfriend defends her gangster boyfriend in an act that sends her to prison. While she's in jail, her boyfriend moves on without her. Starts today at the Limley Monica and ArcLight Hollywood.
Great to have you with us on Film Week. I'm Larry Mantle, joined by critics Charles Solomon, Christy Lemire, and Peter Rayner. Ash is Purest White is our next film, romantic drama, written and directed by Zhangke Jia. Peter, what'd you think?
Well, just quickly, Larry, my fork says property of KPCC, please do not remove.
That sorry. Shows
well, there
you
goes
leeway.
My promise that there was
oh,
no no signage on the utensils. Sorry.
Okay.
There's a chain attached to it,
but back to why
too.
We're here. This is a terrific movie. Jia Zhangke is a terrific Chinese filmmaker who's made quite a few movies. Almost all of his dramatic movies have been made with his wife. Zhao Tao, and she is a remarkable actress who's really at the center of this movie. She plays a kind of gangster's moll who takes the fall for her boyfriend, who's the head of a small-time gang in a coal mining town in northern China, because of an illegal gun that really belonged to him. But she takes the fall and takes 5 years in prison. And when she gets out, he's nowhere to be found, and she sort of has this, fated but determined attempt to try to find him. And when she does find him, it's not even that she even loves him anymore. She even says at one point, "I have no feelings for you, so I don't hate you." But there's a certain code that she has to her life that people need to do the right thing. And like all of Zhangke's movies, it's about the transition from, the old China to the sort of capitalist new China. It takes place over 17 years, starting in 2001. And it's very slow going. You have to sort of, take your time and get into it. If you see this film, don't bail after the first half hour, because it has cumulative power and a great resonance, not only for the story itself, the sort of anti-love story, but also for the whole way that it examines modern China.
We're talking about Ash is Purest White. Christy?
I love this, too. I mentioned a second ago that The Mustang might be the best movie of the week, but this is very much up there as well. And Zhao Tao just gives this powerhouse performance, and it's so understated. And her work in the film and the film as a whole really do accumulate, in their emotional resonance. And what I loved about this film is there's a really wonderful Fellini-esque quality to it, because she's on this journey and awful things have happened to her throughout the course of her life. And she's wandering and just like figuring out how to survive. And bizarre moments of exuberant joy will occur in the midst of tragedy. Like, she's just destitute after she gets out of jail, and awful things have happened to her one by one. And then suddenly there's a wedding in the middle of it, and they'll invite her to take part in it, or just some random dance performance, and she's mesmerized by it. And just that combination of emotions is really intriguing over and over again. And
she crashes the wedding, actually. I mean, she's not she has all these street smarts that she learned from the gangster's life. So she you know, pretends that she's part of the wedding, and they think she's the, you know, she has all the. It's like a in addition to everything else, this movie's sort of like a mini course in how to you know scrape by on nothing, you know, just through scamming. But throughout it all, there's a sort of indomitability to her. She's, you know, she's sort of like, you know, Barbara Stanwyck and Anouk M.A. I mean, it's hard, a weird combination.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's a total grifter, but you want to see her succeed.
Yeah, yeah.
Ash is Purest White, our critics strongly endorsing the film set in China. It's unrated at the Arclight Hollywood and Monica Film Center, Lemley's Monica Film Center, Santa Monica. The Inventor, Out for Blood in Silicon Valley, tells the story of the founder of Theranos, Elizabeth Holmes. The documentary is directed by Alex Gibney, who's a highly prolific filmmaker. It's going to start streaming on HBO and on HBO beginning Monday. Charles, what do you think of this?
Well, this is a really interesting film, and Elizabeth Holmes is in the great 19th century tradition of hucksters like Snake Oil Salesman and Vibrations and so forth. Her pitch was that this special machine that they referred to as an Edison could, from a couple of drops of blood from a finger stick, do like 200 blood tests. It never worked. The technology was beyond anything anyone could actually do. Yet she got Henry Kissinger and George Shultz and Sam Nunn on her board. She got a deal with Walmart to start doing these little wellness centers, and the blood that was taken from there was actually sent to other lab machines that had nothing to do with this thing she was selling. George Shultz's grandson was one of the whistleblowers, and he had a hard time convincing his grandfather all this fraud was going on because he was so mesmerized by this woman who looks kind of like a cyborg in the footage. She rarely blinks. She always apes Steve Jobs' black turtleneck. There's lots of footage of her walking around. It's a little long. Some of the graphics are a little funnier than they need to be. But this is someone who built a company supposedly worth $9 billion on the basis of absolutely nothing.
She must have had extraordinary salesmanship.
I know. And the question is, did she actually believe this in spite of the fact that all this evidence that none of it worked and it couldn't work? Or was she an absolute huckster?
Was Gibney able to interview her for the film?
Yes, and there are hours of footage of her doing TED Talks, being interviewed here. He talks to people who profiled her for The New Yorker and for Fortune, where she got the cover story. And then it was a writer at the Wall Street Journal who uncovered this and started hearing from people that not only does this not work, it can't work given the constraints that have been set up for it. I think her fraud trial is still going on. So, you know, I don't know, but it's a fascinating story of, you know, corruption and greed and fraud.
We're talking about The Inventor, Out for Blood in Silicon Valley from director Alex Gibney, his new documentary. I think it was actually Walgreens, not Walmart.
Walgreens,
that was
right.
Wellness
yeah.
centers were. Lemley's Monica Film Center, showing it on the big screen, and again, HBO starting Monday will be showing it, and it'll be streaming as well. It's unrated. The Highwayman, mystery drama, stars Kevin Costner, Woody Harrelson, and Kim Dickens. John Lee Hancock, the director, John Fusco, is the screenwriter. Peter.
I like this film a lot. It's a really solid movie. I wasn't particularly looking forward to another iteration of the Bonnie and Clyde story. It's about these two over-the-hill Texas Rangers who essentially come out of retirement. Fred Hamer, played by Kevin Costner, and Imani Gault, played by Woody Harrelson.
So it's Clyde and Clyde.
Without any of the then newfangled FBI tactics or ways of dealing with forensics, just sort of going on old school wiles, eventually, of course, it's no secret, track down Bonnie and Clyde and ambush them and kill them. This is a story it's sort of like told from the vantage point of the pursuit of Bonnie and Clyde. You rarely see Bonnie and Clyde in the movie at all. In the end, you see them shot up in the same way that they were in the Arthur Penn film. Is it as good as the Arthur Penn movie? Of course not. But I think it has a really terrific center with these two actors who are just so good together. You know, Woody Harrelson is almost always good, but Kevin Costner is so underrated, I think, at this point as an actor. He's really found his groove, and there's such authenticity to what he does here. There's just no showiness at all. You get a whole backstory of who he is just from the way he delivers a single line. It's really quite remarkable, and I think it's good to see an actor who's sort of found that, you know, you don't have to be a starring leading man and everything now. You can pick and choose what you do. But unlike a lot of his other terrific performances, which are supporting, this is, sort of a co-lead, which is also good to see, you know, in the movies.
And the same time that he's starring in that television series Yellowstone, too. The Highwayman is the film we're talking about. Christy.
Solid is a very good word to describe it. It's fine. It does everything that it does just fine. It's not reinventing the wheel in any way. But yeah, Harrelson and Costner are total pros, and they have very nice chemistry with each other. And it's a perspective on a story we know, that we think we know, from a whole different side of it, which is a little novel. It's from John Lee Hancock, who did The Blind Side. You know, he makes solid films, entertaining, smart, thoughtful, but not, you know, showy or different in any way. I kept thinking about the most recent season of True Detective while I was watching this, because it's these two old partners getting back together to solve this old crime, and all the resentments and the banter, they're all still there after all these years of not having been with each other. So a lot of why this works is because of their chemistry with each other.
I also like that you know, unlike a lot of movies that are you know, so much about violence, that here you really do get a sense of the consequences of violence, particularly in the Woody Harrelson character, who's haunted by all of the killings that occurred in his career as a Texas Ranger, that he can't get over some of the people who were innocently killed and so forth. That's very much a part of the story. And also the Bonnie and Clyde characters in this film are really ruthless. In the Arthur Penn movie, there was a certain glamorization, which may have come just from the casting itself. But here it's described in detail what they actually did, you know, the sadism that was behind a lot of the murders that they committed. Also the whole folk hero aspect, that, you know, thousands and thousands of people turned up for their funerals in the streets during the Depression.
The Highwayman, the film starring Kevin Costner and Woody Harrelson. John Lee Hancock directs. John Fusco, the screenwriter. It's rated R. It's at the Landmark in West L.A., the IPIC in Pasadena. And at the end of the month, it'll begin streaming on Netflix. Many more films to talk about coming up on Film Week. It's Film Week. I'm Larry Mantle with critics Christy Lemire, Charles Solomon, and Peter Rayner. Our next film is Sorry Angel, from a French writer-director, Christophe Honoré. The film stars Vincent Lacoste. Christy, what do you think of Sorry Angel?
This is quite a lovely film. It is a gay French romantic drama set in the early 90s. And so the AIDS crisis is very much a factor here. Men are dying. They are losing friends. They are losing loved ones. And the main actor here, Pierre Della Donchamp, is a writer living in Paris who is sick and getting weaker all the time. But he meets a younger man, a guy about 20 years old, played by Vincent Lacoste, who he falls in love with, like against all expectations. They have about a 10-15 year difference between them, but an instant connection. And each of them is not really looking for this at the time, and they kind of fall in and out of one another's lives. It's dreamy and elliptical, despite the underlying realism here of what's going on in these characters' lives. There's a dreamy kind of romantic way that it's shot, a lot of kind of blues, kind of dreamy blues and gauzy
grays.
Yeah, and it's intimate, it's lovely. I quite liked it.
Charles, do you like Sorry Angel?
Christy liked it a lot better than I did. I found it rather dreary, frankly, that neither gay nor Paris nor sex looked like much fun. And I was surprised it was billed as a comedy, because it certainly isn't.
It's not funny, no.
No, not at all. It's very complicated, particularly Jacques, the main character, has an ex-lover who is worse off than he is. He has an ex-girlfriend and a son who lives with him. So you've got all these pieces that have to keep moving around like an orrery, or you're setting up an eclipse. But I just didn't think it was a lot of fun.
I kind of like that about it, though, that you don't necessarily know who the characters are and how they are all related to each other. And it kind of fills in those gaps in a way that is not done in a hand-holding kind of obvious way. I like that it, you know, there are payoffs to sticking around for it. So I enjoyed it.
Christophe Honoré's film Sorry Angel is unrated. It's at the New Art Theater in West Los Angeles. The documentary Superpower Dogs is directed by Daniel Ferguson. Christy.
This is an IMAX 3D documentary about dogs. That's all you need to know.
No surprise there.
No, okay. This is all you need to know.
Big dogs on the screen.
Oh, my gosh. If any format was ever the perfect one for a doggy movie, like just giant slow motion galumphing up to the lens through snow, through water. So it's about rescue dogs. And I think it looks on the surface, at least through its marketing, like it's going to be adorable and really super cute. And yeah, there are some aww moments, but it's about these really brave, heroic, and well-trained dogs. And it takes you through what they have to go through to be ready to help save lives, to find people in emergencies. And so you have a Newfoundland who works with the Italian Coast Guard. You have a dog that we see from its puppyhood all the way through its training to work for search and rescue in Florida, based in Miami, where there's, you know, a ton of tragedies all the time through hurricanes and all kinds of awful things that happen in Florida. And there's a couple of dogs, bloodhounds, who protect a wildlife preserve in Kenya from poachers. And it's about the science of how these different breeds are equipped to do these different jobs. The film is part of a new exhibit at the California Science Center called Dogs, A Science Tale, T-A-I-L, and which will be there until January. Which
and no doubt will be very popular.
It will. So it is adorable, and it's great for the whole family. It's only 45 minutes long. I recommend it highly.
Superpower Dogs at the California Science Center's IMAX Theater in Exposition Park. Daniel Ferguson, the director. It's rated G. Combat Obscura, a documentary directed by Miles Lugosi. Peter, what did you think?
Well, Miles Lugosi was a high school graduate who went directly into the Marines. He was, I think, for about 7 months, sort of the videographer for a combat unit in unit in Afghanistan. And officially, he was there to film stuff as a recruitment tool for the Marines, and was all supposed to be very, you know, varnished and uncontroversial and rah-rah. And he did provide that film for the Marines, but he had all this other footage of these guys, in very dire situations, you know, lots of blood and thunder, smoking dope, cursing, all sorts of things that aren't in the official version. And he saved the footage and over a period of years put it together, and that's this film, which is quite interesting. I don't think you can make any political hay over the fact that in a lot of these sequences the soldiers seem callous towards what they're doing or that they're stoned or whatever. I mean, it's no great revelation, and we've seen a lot of this in dramatic films. But to see it in a documentary, I think is somewhat revelatory and says nothing about, you know, whether the soldiers should even be there or not. It's just, you know, a portrait of what goes down. And in that sense, I think it's sort of an eye opener to see something that's this, you know, unbiased and unmanipulative, just you know, an eye looking down on things.
Combat Obscura from director Miles Lugosi. It's unrated. Lemley's Glendale Theater. The Aftermath stars Keira Knightley, Jason Clarke, and Alexander Skarsgård. James Kent, the director, Joe Shrapnel, and Anna Waterhouse are the screenwriters. Peter?
This is pretty dull and dreary. It's set in Hamburg right after World War II. It's been destroyed by the bombing, and Keira Knightley plays the wife of a British colonel who's already stationed there, and they're put into a home which was owned by a German architect played by Alexander Sarsgaard, and of course a romance develops between him and Keira Knightley, even though she hates everybody, it seems like, and is very, you know, snippy towards every aspect of her life and the world. And, you know, there's no chemistry between any of the people in this movie.
What do you think, Christy?
I agree with a lot of that. I would say she has better chemistry with Alexander Skarsgård than she has with Jason Clarke, who is her husband, with whom she has just zero. Like,
well,
it is ice cold.
Better biology with Alexander
Yikes, Skarsgård. That too. The clothes are great. I hate the ending of this film so much. It makes absolutely no sense and does not achieve the emotional resonance it's looking for. But Keira Knightley gets to wear some really great dresses.
The aftermath is at the ArcLight Hollywood, the Landmark West LA. It's rated R. Yardy is the feature directorial debut of actor Idris Elba. What do you think, Peter?
This is his directorial debut, as you say. He's in a Netflix comedy now. I guess he wanted a change of pace as a director. He's not in the film. It has its moments. It's set in the, Jamaican drug scene of the 70s and 80s. And in England, the lead character moves to London to carry out some cocaine deals and turns into a whole big mess. His wife and daughter are also there. There's a lot of gunplay and a lot of stuff going on that seems fairly routine for this kind of movie. I wish the sort of ethnic aspects of this film had come to the fore more, and they had played down the druggy stuff, which you've seen a million times. But they do provide subtitles, which is really useful in this movie, where everybody is speaking with that wonderful Jamaican lilt, but it's hard to understand sometimes unless you read the subtitles.
Yardy is the film, directed by Idris Elba. Brock Norman Brock and Martin Stellman are the screenwriters. It's unrated in select theaters. Christy, in about 30 seconds, you tell us about the 1980 film Babylon, which is finally getting a U.S. release.
It would make an excellent double feature with Yardy, actually, because it's about Jamaicans living in London in 1980. And enduring racism and struggling to survive. This was never released in the United States prior to now because it was deemed too controversial. But it's a really vivid look at a certain part of life. They also have subtitles here, Peter.
Good.
And Chris Menge shot it. Oscar-winning DP Chris Menge shot it.
Babylon from 1980, finally an American release at Lemley's Glendale and Monica Film Center Theaters. Franco Rosso, the director and co-screenwriter of that film. It's Film Week on 89.3 KPCC.